Hello and welcome to Behind the Bar Show. I'm your host, Tim Morrison, a.k.a. Mr. Martini. I am heading off to Florida for a vacation, but before I go, here's another episode on listener feedback, the 2007 St. George Spirits Open House, and Drinks of the Century. During our break, we'll feature a quote from Humphrey Bogart. So, here we go. Well, here we are on the 37th episode, still chugging along. I wanted to be sure to put together a show before I left on vacation for Central Florida, so here it is. I want to give an update on St. George Spirits Open House, and then we're going to have fun with the Drinks of the Century bit. But first, listener feedback. Richard in Orlando, thank you for sending me a list of bars I may want to check out while in Orlando. I definitely appreciate it, and I hope to be able to check a couple of those out while I'm down there. Scott from Newtown, Connecticut, thank you for the email letting me know you found the Peychaud Bitters. I'm glad to hear that. Be sure to try a real Sazerac now and let me know what you think. Scott mentioned he was turned on to the Negroni by Joe, a bartender at Band B in the Venetian in Vegas. Since then, Scott has been experimenting with Negroni-style drinks and wanted to share these ideas with everyone else. So here we go. Scott, sorry I haven't had a chance to try these yet, but I'll let you know what I think as soon as I do. His Negroni variations are 1 ounce tequila, 1 ounce Campari, and 1 ounce Bianco vermouth. And then there's the 1 ounce bourbon, 1 ounce Campari, and 1 ounce sweet vermouth or Bianco vermouth, depending on what mood you're in, he says. This is what I like to hear, Scott. I like it when people get in the groove and start experimenting by switching out ingredients for something else. Let your creative juices flow and see what you can come up with. Das, thank you for the email about bitters and for the picture of your bitters collection. Very nice collection indeed. I'm happy to hear when others really get what bitters do to a cocktail, so that was an excellent email. Thank you also for sharing your cocktail creation called the Mortgage Cocktail. You know, I love the story that you came up with the recipe after shopping for mortgages because it left a bitter taste in your mouth. Too funny, and I'm more than happy to give the recipe out. Again, I must say I have not had the opportunity to try this recipe. I'll let you know what I think as soon as I do. So for all the listeners out there, this is a recipe created by a fellow Behind the Bar Show listener named Doss. The drink is the Mortgage Cocktail and is 1.5 ounce gin. Doss recommends Bombay Original. 3/4 ounce fresh squeezed orange juice, 1/2 ounce Campari, 1/2 ounce cherry hearing liqueur, and 2 dashes of Hermes or aromatic bitters. Now you can also use Angostura as well. Stir and strain into a chilled cocktail glass and garnish with an orange twist. Steve from San Francisco, bartender and my Mothman contact, thank you so much for the Mothman CD. I'm really enjoying it, and also thank you for the cocktail book. I greatly appreciate it, and I'll have to stop by your bar soon to say thank you in person. Christian from Middletown, Connecticut, thank you for the email. I'm sorry to hear you also had a bad experience at Harry's Bar in Venice, Italy. Yes, I was very saddened by how horrible that bar was. I really hoped it would be a great experience, but instead it left me broke and also stressed out just watching the waiters and bartenders run around like the world was on fire. Christian also wanted me to mention a drink that is a classic drink of Verona, the Spritz, which was made with equal parts soda water, Prosecco, and Aperol. Now, Aperol is like Campari, but is not as bitter as Campari. So if you want a bitter aperitif, or a bitter liqueur, but Campari is just, you know, too much for you, try Aperol. You might like it better. Averna is another great herbal liqueur as well. Well, that about does it. We have a lot to get into, so let's get on with the rest of the show. So bring on the applause, and off we go. Okay, so I just got back from the 2007 St. George Spirits Open House. For those who haven't already heard my episode 30, which was on the 2006 St. George Spirits Open House, let me give you a quick summary. But first, let me mention how amazing it is to think that I did a critique of their 2006 Open House during episode 30, and here I am on episode 37 doing it again, this time for 2007. I mean, if I ever needed a measurement for how much my show has slowed down, this just about does it. Damn that day job for taking away all that time that I could be podcasting. But anyways, let's continue. St. George Spirits is a wonderful distillery here in the Bay Area, right across the bay from San Francisco in the old Alameda Naval Air Force Base. They are widely known for Hangar One Vodka, an excellent name considering that their distillery is an old hangar. They don't just make Hangar One Vodka, they distill whiskey, eau de vie, grappa, and liqueurs. Last time I mentioned some issues I had with the open house, like having the vodka tasting at the same bar where they were making the cocktails. It caused for a massive backup at the bar. I'm talking four very long lines of people trying to get to the bar. If you could even call them lines, at some point it was just a mad rush of a whole wall of people trying to get to the bar. The problem was that for someone who just wanted to do a vodka tasting, which is quick to pour, they were having to wait in line with all those who were using their drink tickets to have a cocktail shaken up and poured. Once the person who wanted the quick small taste of one type of vodka got their sample, they had to get back in line all over again if they wanted to taste a different flavored vodka. My suggestion for this was to move the vodka tasting to a separate area, and then since the cocktails were being poured so fast and since there was only five cocktails being made, I thought they should have someone shaking up the drinks while they had other people behind the bar taking those drinks and doing the pouring. Well, after meeting Lou, the tasting room manager, and finding out that they were going to put my suggestions into play this year, I had to be there to see how things worked out. First, let me say, don't get me wrong, last year was a blast, but this year rocked the house, or should I say, hangar. Since you only received three drink tickets, just like last year, they only had three flavored cocktails to try. They set up a big sign with the names of each cocktail with big arrows pointing to either side of the bar or to the middle. They had three bartenders behind the bar, each focusing on one cocktail. This way, you got in line for whichever cocktail you wanted to try. Another smart thinking step was they pre-mixed the ingredients in large batches and then would fill a juice pouring container full of the cocktail mix. All they had to do during showtime was fill their shaker full of ice, pour in the pre-made cocktail into the shaker, shake it up to get to the correct chill and dilution, and then strain into the customer glasses. This type of pre-made drink might not make for the freshest type drink, and I'm talking about how I believe it is best to use fresh squeezed juice, say from lemons or limes, just as you're going to make the drink, but for the drinks they were making, for the small sample size drinks being served, and for the massive amount of people there, it was definitely the best call and quite ingenious for the situation. The best was that they did move the vodka tastings away from the bar and out on the floor with the rest of the tables, serving tastings of eau de vie, brandy, whiskey, pear brandy, cheese spirits, which I enjoy so much, food tables, etc. They had two separate tables pouring vodka samples. Each was a luge in a different shape. One was a big block of ice with the logo clouded inside saying Hangar One. My favorite luge, though, was the other one. It was a massive block of ice shaped just like a bottle. The ice was crystal clear except for the letters saying Hangar One down the middle, which was all cloudy like you see in the ice cubes at home. It was a beautiful piece of ice work. The fun part of a luge is the tunnel that goes from one side down to the other. The person pouring your sample would pour it in one side, and you hold your glass on the other side, letting the vodka actually flow through the center of the block of ice and out the other side into your glass. Now, I truly believe more people got to actually sample all the flavored vodkas this time than they did last year. I know I went through last year without even trying any of the vodkas. I pretty much just didn't want to wait in that long line. All in all, this year was a total success in my opinion, and I must say, way to go, St. George Spirits. It was wonderful meeting Lance Winters, the master distiller for St. George Spirits, and Brian Backus, a co-founder of Cheese Spirits. As many know from my previous shows, I really enjoy the Chi Black and Chi White tea liqueurs, especially since I've created two cocktails not using them. I've also received a lot of email from people looking for Chi Spirits. First, let me just say, to learn more about it, you can go to their website at www.chispirits.com. And that's Chi spelled Q-I, so it's QISpirits.com. Now, I've been told they're currently only available in Northern California or in beverages more all over California, in Georgia, and in New York. If you look on the web, you may find some online spirits stores that will ship, but please keep in mind the laws of your state. I'm sure they're working in getting out to other states, but the red tape can be crazy, especially when dealing with something as regulated as alcohol. Anyways, Lance and Brian, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me. I know it was hectic with all the constant pouring, the large crowd, and it was my honor to meet you both. There are a couple new products I'd like to mention from St. George Spirits that I have just recently tried of theirs. Before I give my thoughts on them, let me first start with my disclaimer that I am in no way affiliated with Hangar 1, St. George Spirits, Cheese Spirits, or Aqua Perfecta, nor do my opinions reflect the opinions of the companies mentioned. I am not paid by them, and I believe everything I say in any of my shows. It's my reputation on the line, after all. That said, the two new products are Hangar 1 Chipotle-infused vodka and Basil Eau de Vie. First, Hangar 1 Chipotle Vodka, labeled Batch 2006-10-06B. I do believe these are made in limited quantities, and I can't imagine how much time and effort it must go into actually getting everything just right to make such an interesting vodka infusion. You can start to appreciate the amount of work that must have been involved by just reading the back of the label of the bottle. It explains how the base starts with vodka and Fresno chilies, and then infused with bell peppers, jalapenos, and habaneros. Chipotles are smoked jalapeno peppers. This process adds a wonderful smoky flavor to the pepper, while actually removing some of the heat, in my opinion. For the peppers in this vodka, the label gives thanks to T-Rex Barbecue in Berkeley, California, for roasting hundreds of pounds of peppers, each differently, all for making this intriguing vodka. Okay, so how does it taste? First, hot. If you take a taste of this neat and swirl around your mouth, you will definitely catch the smoky pepper flavor and then all the pinpricks dancing all over your tongue. The flavor can be quite strong, and it is definitely peppery. Chipotle is exactly what it stands up to be. Now, here's something I just did recently using the Chipotle vodka. I was bartending for a summer party in Walnut Creek, California. The summer party started at 3 p.m. and it was about 97 degrees Fahrenheit, or about 36 degrees Celsius outside. We wanted to serve drinks that would be fitting for summer and the heat, so we were making mojitos and margaritas. For the margaritas, I stepped away from the classic margarita and made modern, since that was more fitting for the specific party that I was bartending for. Still, you know me, I cannot stand using store-bought mix. I also need to be able to whip out these drinks quickly, so I wanted to make a modern-style margarita that would be the only drink I would be making using a sweet and sour. I made my own mix beforehand using Meyer lemons and homemade simple syrup, which was equal parts dehydrated cane sugar and equal parts water. I cannot give you the proportions because the freshly squeezed Meyer lemons and the simple syrup, so I pretty much squeezed about a little over 3 cups worth of lemon juice. Then I just kept adding the simple syrup to it till it reached a balance that I thought was perfect for me in using for this specific drink. If you know, as I've mentioned before about sweet and sour mixes, I don't really believe in having just like one single mix to use for all different types of drinks that are using sweet and sours, because the sweet and sour I created here for this margarita might not work for, say, a whiskey sour. So anyways, I decided to take a bottle of this chipotle-infused vodka with me to try something different. I made up what I was calling a chipotle margarita. To do this, I poured over ice 1.5 ounce silver tequila, 3/4 ounce Cointreau, 1/2 ounce chipotle vodka, 4 lime wedges, which was basically half a lime, squeezed and dropped into the shaker, and a hefty pour of my sweet and sour mix, roughly 2 or 3 ounces. I like to be specific on my recipes, but when working like a bar at a summer barbecue like this, it was pour quick and keep the party going. So, I shook all that up and strained it into a fresh plastic cup filled with ice. Yes, plastic. It was a barbecue party after all. And I was surprised at the response. I wasn't sure how it would be taken, but the response seemed to be that of intrigue, along with a request for more. So it worked out very well. It's definitely the flavor of margarita with the chipotle. I think it blended very nicely. Okay, so enough of that. Now the basil eau de vie. This is under the St. George Spirits Aqua Perfecta label. Eau de vie is a brandy, so this is a basil-flavored brandy. This eau de vie is actually very light on the basil flavor, in my opinion. You may find it to be strong. It's all dependent on how, I guess, your taste buds are. But for me, the taste was very light on basil as you sip it. I found it to be just a smooth tasting spirit and taste. But where the basil really came into play was the nose. Since I always smell a spirit before tasting it for the first time, the smell was kind of unexpected and gave me a bad first impression, actually. I wasn't expecting it to taste very well after the first smell, especially since the aroma was quite strong. But to my surprise, the flavor was very light and smooth. I was expecting something a bit stronger in flavor, but now I'm thrilled with its depth because it makes it light. Actually, in hindsight, I remember after tasting it neat, that it left me with an aftertaste of basil in my mouth. And that made its presence well known. So maybe I should say that it might taste really smooth when you first taste it, but it's really the aftertaste that's really going to get you with that basil flavor. So, but interestingly enough, I tried the cocktail, a cocktail they were making at the open house. They're calling it the Thai Fighter, as in T-H-A-I, Thai Fighter, which is made with this basil eau de vie, lime juice, and ginger syrup. I thought the basil stood out more in this drink than when I sipped the brandy neat, so it's kind of interesting. I believe, maybe mixing it with other flavors really brings out that basil flavor. Actually, the first thing that came to mind was wanting to have a caprese. Now, I would find that drink to pair very well with a caprese, which happens to be my favorite appetizer, by the way. A tomato slice on an equal sized slice of mozzarella cheese, olive oil, pepper, and fresh basil. Okay, now I'm going to get myself hungry if I keep talking about that, but even though I think their TIE Fighter cocktail would be an excellent beverage pairing with a caprese, I left there with a couple bottles of this basil-infused brandy, and I'll be working on a new drink myself, determined to find a pairing made in heaven between a drink using this basil eau de vie and my favorite appetizer, the caprese. So we'll see what I come up with. If I come up with something good, my listeners will be the first to know. Well, that will wrap up my thoughts on the 2007 St. George Spirits Open House. All in all, I give it 5 out of 5 martinis. Everything this year was spot on. The issues I had with their food spread last year was even fixed this time around. I didn't mention that last year in last year's review because, hey, I talk alcohol, not food. Anyway, I cannot wait for next year's. And I know there are other distilleries around here that I must hunt down and see if I can either get a tour or get information about them so that I can share. So with that done, let's go straight to the break now. And when we come back, I'm going to talk about the drinks of the century. Stay tuned. People who don't drink are afraid of revealing themselves. Humphrey Bogart. And welcome back. Now, as mentioned, I'm finishing this episode with information I received from a press release some time ago that I found just interesting. It's interesting the kind of information PR people are sending me since I've been doing this show. Most are serious advertisements for a particular brand, a brand name pushing a new flavor. Even though giving out those press releases in my show may be a great way to fill time and pass on information, I just haven't been able to do it as I'd rather do what I did with the first half of the show. If I'm going to promote or talk about spirit brands, I'm going to talk about something that I tried personally and give you my personal opinion on them. Now, this press release was a good one, though. It comes from an Anchor Hawking survey identifying the drinks of a century. The survey involved asking mixologists from the United States Bartenders Guild questions to find the signature cocktail for each decade since 1900. And here are the results. The 1900s to 1910 gave us the Model T, Cubism emerges, Wilbur Brothers take flight, and Anchor Hawking is founded in Lancaster, Ohio, a global home products company designing high-quality glass products, and the company who commissioned this survey for their 100th anniversary. As for the drink that reigned supreme during this decade, it goes to the old-fashioned. I was going to point you to my episode 4, Whiskey Part 1, to hear how I prefer to make an old-fashioned, but it's interesting to see how my own preferences have changed. Back on that episode, I gave the way most bartenders do it, including muddling an orange and a cherry and adding club soda. Now, as I've learned more myself, I now cringe at the thought of putting club soda in it in a well-made old-fashioned. So my current method for an old-fashioned is to soak a sugar cube in bitters and just a small dash of water, enough to melt the sugar cube. At times, I may just use simple syrup and bitters. If using sugar cube, muddle it. I still like to add orange, but I now use the zest of an orange by squeezing it over the drink and dropping it in. And I'll stir this all together, blend the oils. Add the bourbon, stir some more, add ice, stir some more, and then more ice, and give it a final stir. Basically, a lot of stirring to fully chill and dilute the drink. Garnish with an orange wedge and a cherry. 1910 to 1920, steel was invented, and Einstein gave his theory of relativity, E equals mc squared. The beverage named the drink of this decade was the Singapore Sling. If you'd like to hear the original Singapore Sling recipe, as well as the common version recipe, check out my episode 2 gin episode. Now we move on to 1920s to 1930, which is known as the Jazz Age and is the time penicillin was discovered. The voted-upon drink of this decade was the Bloody Mary, that famous alcoholic beverage known to spice up tomato juice. Now, as for a recipe for Bloody Mary, there could be hundreds of them. You could have 20 people make you a Bloody Mary, and you'll probably see 20 different ways of making it. This is a great drink that allows you to show your own style. So basically just, you know, start off with a with the basics by adding to a glass 1.5 ounce to 2 ounces of vodka, 3 ounces of tomato juice, and 1/2 ounce lemon juice. Next comes the spices. You can use anything like black pepper, horseradish, Worcestershire sauce, celery salt, hot sauce, wasabi, basically anything you like. And just this is where your creative juices should flow. Now let's move on to the 1930s to 1940. During the Great Depression, swing music goes in full swing, and the golden age of the radio. During this time, the Manhattan rocked the decade. Now, I love the Manhattan because I'm definitely a major whiskey fan. I'm always trying new whiskeys, and my current favorite could be replaced next week by another. Probably the only thing that stayed the same with me and whiskey is my choice of scotch, which is still Lafroy 15 Year. My current Manhattan recipe, made at home, is using 2 ounce Woodford Reserve bourbon, 1.5 ounce Gallo sweet vermouth, and a dash of bitters, stirred with ice and strained into a chilled cocktail glass, garnished with a brandied cherry. The 1940s to 1950 brought us World War II and the Cold War. It's also the time when the National Basketball Association was created. During this time, the drinks were getting fruity, and the Mai Tai was decided as the drink of this decade. To hear the original Trader Vic's recipe, as well as the common recipe taught in bartending schools, check out my episode 6 rum. Like how I'm plugging my other shows, in just case you haven't heard them. In the 1950s to 1960, rock and roll is the name of the game, and the vodka martini takes top notch. Okay, what is there to say about the vodka martini? Even though I really enjoy dry vermouth and a gin martini, since we're talking vodka here, and vodka doesn't have much flavor at all, I'm not really inclined to put too much vermouth in a vodka martini, as it'll end up tasting like watered-down yet alcoholic-y vermouth. If making a vodka martini, I'll swirl vermouth in a chilled cocktail glass, dump out the excess. After shaking up vodka and a dash of orange bitters, I'll strain that into a glass and garnish with a lemon twist. The 1960s to 1970 was an exciting time. The Beatles were rocking the teenagers. James Bond was rocking the screens. Woodstock was in full effect. Martin Luther King gave his I Have a Dream speech. And there was the lunar landing. As for the drinks of the times, we give this one to the Whiskey Sour. Now, the Whiskey Sour was also given on my episode 4, Whiskey Part 1, but I'll give the recipe again. I like to shake this since I'm using a juice. In a shaker filled with ice, pour in 2 ounce whiskey, 3/4 ounce lemon juice, and 1 ounce simple syrup. Shake and strain into a chilled sour glass and garnish with an orange wheel and a cherry. The 1970s to 1980 gave us Jaws and Microsoft, as well as the sexual revolution. The Anchor Hawking Survey calls this decade the time of the Long Island Iced Tea. To hear my Long Island Iced Tea recipes and recipes for other variations, check out my episode 24, Not So Iced Tea. Now we're almost done here. In 1980s to 1990, hip-hop goes mainstream. Cable TV is the best thing since sliced bread. Apple Macintosh takes off and yuppies rule the world. The drink of this decade was the Sex on the Beach. In a Collins glass filled with cracked ice, pour in 1 ounce of vodka, 1/2 ounce peach schnapps, then fill with 1/2 orange juice and 1/2 cranberry juice. Give her a stir, garnish with a cherry, and serve. Now be sure to pop the cherry before finishing the drink. To finish off, we have the 1990s to 2000. With the launch of the World Wide Web, Nelson Mandela freed, and the big Y2K bug scare. We also have a drink that is still a huge hit, the Cosmopolitan. 1/2 ounce lemon vodka, 1/4 ounce Cointreau, 1/4 ounce fresh lime juice, and a splash of cranberry juice. Shake with ice and strain into a chilled cocktail glass. Try this with Mandarin vodka as well. Well, that finishes off the drinks of the decades, but what about the century? The top named drink of the 20th century was the martini, of course. And just for a little fun, how about the worst drink of the 20th century? That went to the brain hemorrhage, served as a shooter. Now, if you're interested in seeing the brain hemorrhage, check out my 21st episode, which was a bonus video show. In this video, I show how to layer alcohol by making the brain hemorrhage. Now, the brain hemorrhage might be a sickly sweet shot, but I don't know if I would call it the worst. I pretty much agree with all the drinks of the decades and with the drink of the century, but if you want to know my worst drink of the century, it would be a different shot called the cement mixer, where you fill a shot glass halfway with Irish cream, and then the rest of the way with lime juice. The acid in lime juice makes the Irish cream curdle, so when the drinker shoots it in their mouth, and they're supposed to swish this, believe it or not, it completely curdles into a fibery mess in their mouth. Disgusting. And I think that's going to do it for this show. I'm actually over 30 minutes, so wrapping it up here. I'm off to Florida for the rest of the month. Please feel free to still send me email at behindthebarshow@gmail.com. I'll be checking my messages occasionally. I'll also remember you can send me a voice letter at 2069 the bar, area code 206-984-3227, and I may play it on the next show. So that does it for now. As always, cheers, drink responsibly, and please don't drink and drive. Oh,